I know more about sports than you, good sir.
Tis to laugh. Dare I say my grandmother could outsport you any day of the week.
Gentlemen, may I borrow your ear for a moment?
But of course!
BetDSI.net is an awesome site where you can play for free and win real cash. Are you a sports nut with a lot of confidence?
Thoroughly.
Maybe you're a casual fan with a flair for the stats.
Guilty!
Put your knowledge to the test and win real cash at BetDSI.net. It's fun, it's entertaining, and it's just another way to enjoy the sport you already love. It's BetDSI.net.
Huzzah!
Look up. Look way up. He sits alone atop the standings. Bob McCown and Primetime Sports. Now on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Reading the CHFI music library again, are we? Easy listening music? No, I'm sure Led Zeppelin is not on CHFI. That was the point. Greetings and salutations to y'all. It's Friday, the 29th day of April. This will be the last April day we'll be on the air, won't it? 2016. By the time we get back on Monday, it'll be May. Well, that's nice. Will I be here on May the 4th? I won't be here on May the 4th, will I? Well, remind me on Tuesday to give my annual greeting. We have telephone calls to get to in this hour. That would be you on the topic of your choice, 870-590, star 591, 888-666-0590. Did I give all the numbers? We'll do it again. 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590. There you go. Now I gave all the numbers. Later, a roundtable for you. And much to discuss. From the NHL playoffs to the NBA playoffs to the Raptors playing a game six, the NFL draft last night. The ridiculous draft lottery on this network or CBC or wherever it is. On some network. John Shannon back there. Can we get a shot without John Shannon in it, please? Because I'm afraid of what he's going to do back there. But Shannon's on the roundtable, so undoubtedly we'll have to discuss the lottery. And even if we don't discuss it, he'll bring it up. PEDs. Oh, there's lots to talk about. Don't worry about a thing. John Shannon, Gordon Kirk, and Brad Fay will wander in here. Fay has never done a roundtable with me, I don't think. Has he? I don't think so. Maybe with somebody else, but not with me. All right, let's go. Let's see what you morons have on your minds here. Michael is in Bradford, Ontario. Hello.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Good.
Glad to be the first moron on the call for you.
Thanks.
So I just wanted to get your thoughts on the draft last night. I'm a big Buckeye fan, and just wanted to see what you thought about Ezekiel going 4 and Boza going 3 and where that leaves him for this year coming up.
Boza's a really good player. I like him a lot. Ezekiel is a very good running back. But it is puzzling that Dallas would take him as early as they did, just given the de-emphasis on the running game in the National Football League.
Yeah.
I find that really intriguing. And while I love the way Ezekiel runs and his contribution, do I see him as an impact back in the National Football League? like a Sanders, you know what I mean? Like a real star? I don't. I don't see him as that guy. I just see him as a useful workhorse.
So the big pick to take on the fourth pick.
Well, that's what I think.
Yeah.
Now, I saw a draft projection that had the Cleveland Browns taking him at number 8. And even there, I thought, wow, that's pretty high for a running back who doesn't have the breakaway kind of skill set. Now, I know he demonstrated some of that, but he's not a dancer. He's a straight-ahead runner. And he's got decent speed and he's got decent size, and maybe I'm underselling him, but you know, I watch a lot of Ohio State football. I watched almost every game that Ezekiel Elliott played, and he impressed me as a very, very good back, but not a great back, not a breakthrough kind of guy, not a Peterson kind of guy. And then if you're going to draft that a back that high, I think that's what you want. You want a guy who you can give the ball to 20, 25 times. Mind you, nobody gets the ball 20, 25 times anymore in the NFL.
No, it's all committee now.
Yeah. So if you give the guy the ball 20, 25 times and he can average close to 100 yards a game, okay, I got it. Do you think Ezekiel is that kind of guy?
I watched every game this year. I try to get them online if I can't get them on TV. And he's definitely, you know, going to bring something to Dallas that they haven't had since DeMarco. And I guess they're trying to rebuild that connection with Romo. They did have some guys already in there that looked like they were going to do it by committee. And it's interesting to see where they go now. I'm not a Cowboys fan. I'm a Buckeye fan. But now I'll be watching them a lot closer to see how those guys are doing.
Yeah,
I'm curious to see what it does for the program, too, moving forward with five guys in the first round, how that kind of looks and what Urban Meyer has been able to do with that program.
Yeah, don't worry about it. He's probably, you know, he's certainly in the top three coaches in the U.S. And he has a reputation of producing high draft choices. And this year was no exception. And the program has been among the elite programs in college football since he's been there and intermittently before he was there. There's lots of good players still at Ohio State. Now, can they win a national championship with as many guys as they lost? You would think not. But if you go back and look at the national championship team of a couple of years ago, did you think that they had enough experience? Well, at the beginning of the year, I didn't. So, never say never. Alan in Tillsonburg. Hello.
How are you, Bob?
I'm well, thank you.
I was actually quite intrigued by a conversation you guys had yesterday, Shannon Stock and yourself, about goalies not going high in the draft.
Right.
And I did a little research. Now, there's only been three goalies to go number one in the draft. The last one was Marc-Andre Fleury. And you can't tell me that there hasn't been as good or better goalies have been taken later in the draft. So I don't understand myself why goalies don't get a higher push in the draft, because that is the most important position.
Well, that's my point. Like, and I tried to relate it to what was going to happen last night in the NFL draft, and did, which was the first two draft picks were both quarterbacks, and in both cases teams traded up to get those players because they recognize, football recognizes, you don't win without a good quarterback. Maybe you don't have to have a great quarterback, but you have to have a good one in order to win. It is the fundamental building block of an NFL franchise. And if I convert that to hockey, you ask almost any hockey guy, what's the most important position? And instantly, they will say, goaltender. Got to have the goaltender. Well, why don't you draft goaltenders either? Why isn't there a priority on goaltenders? Why are you not worried that somebody's going to draft the guy that you want before you take him in the third round? And I frankly, there's no answer to it. At least, I didn't get one from Shannon, and Stock agreed with me. So, and it sounds like you do too, right?
Absolutely.
You know, it's puzzling to me. And I understand it takes time for goaltenders to develop. I understand that you might be able to make more mistakes with goaltenders, although I don't know why. I don't know why you'd make more mistakes with goaltenders when you're drafting them than you would with, you know, 17-year-old forwards or 17-year-old defensemen. Defensemen even worse. Everybody salivates over defensemen. Got to have defensemen. Well, they'll take defensemen high in the draft, day after day after day after day. They won't take goaltenders. What's the reason? And mostly, hockey is a game of monkey see, monkey do. This is the way we've done it. This is the way we're going to do it. The most stubborn people that I encounter or have encountered over my 40-plus years of doing this job are hockey people who will insist up, down, back, forth, and sideways. There's nothing wrong. We know what we're doing. You know, shut up and leave us alone. And I submit, no, you don't know what you're doing. You have a game that has too few goals scored in it. You've lost the entertainment value of it. You won't deal with the size of the goaltending equipment. Even now that they're finally going to do something, they're going to do half of it. Well, they got excuses for everything. If you want to change things, you can change them. And I'll tell you, it's an inferiority complex that hockey people have. They don't want to talk about it, but they know they're the least popular team sport in North America. Like legitimate team sport. Baseball, football, basketball, way bigger, way stronger, way more popular. And somehow they feel like they have to close ranks and defend what goes on in the game of hockey. And some of that is, whether deliberately or otherwise, they've morphed into this thing where you don't take a goaltender high in the first round. I can't even remember the last time there was a conversation about a goaltender high in the first round of the draft. Forget whether they took him. Just a conversation. And if you break it down to its basic core, what's the most important position? What's the one thing you have to have if you're going to be successful? The answer is goaltending. And if that's the most important thing, that's the first thing I'm looking for if I'm building a team. How do I get better with my goaltending situation? And this nonsense about, well, it takes 5 or 6 years for them to develop. No, it doesn't have to. But they have, at the same time, we all know defensemen are slow to develop. 3, 4, 5, 6 years till they get to their potential? Not uncommon. In fact, very common. What makes you think a goaltender would take even longer than that? Truth of the matter is, it doesn't. There is no answer for that question. Spike in Toronto, hello.
Hey, how you doing, Bob?
I'm well, Spike.
Until after I speak. I'm calling to disagree with your assessment of
That's not possible.
Game.
That is not possible, but go ahead and give it your best shot.
I disagree with the assessment of the Raptors' last game that a whole lot of personalities, radio and television, are assessing. The reason is because it affects how fans look at the next game or the Raptors' potential, especially the less focused fans, I'll call them.
Okay, well, so what's my perspective on it? I mean, you're grouping me in here with a bunch of real
Raptors
idiots here.
Horrible for three quarters, and I disagree with that. I think the Raptors played absolute trash ball for the first quarter. Second and third quarters was a wash.
I'll buy that.
They didn't get further back. They didn't get closer ahead. It was just a wash. They played equal basketball. So from a fan's perspective, to think that your Raptors got destroyed for three quarters leaves it like a different taste in your mouth, leaves you less interested in watching the next game because you have that throw up your hands.
Nah, if you're a fan, you're a fan. Look, here's what I'll say. I've heard that sentiment, too, by from others. I don't think I repeated it. If I did, I will concede that you are right, that they did not play horribly in the second and third quarters. They played
Come on, you didn't just say that.
Yeah, I'll concede. But I'm only conceding on the condition that I said they were horrible for three quarters, and I have no recollection of ever saying that.
Oh, it was yesterday.
Well, I don't remember yesterday. I barely remember what your name is, and I mentioned it about 90 seconds ago. So if you want to test my memory, you're going to lose. But I will. I mean, look, yeah, they were about a wash overall. I think they got it down to, I want to say, three at one point, and then Indiana went on a run. And then they pecked it down, and then Indiana went on another run. Well, which is what happens in basketball. And then they had the miraculous fourth quarter, late third and fourth quarter. And the net result is they get a chance to close out tonight. And I here's what I will tell you unequivocally and inarguably. I got no clue what's going to happen. I have no sense of confidence in this team. But at the same time, I know they're more than capable of winning this game. I don't trust them, but I don't distrust them. I don't think they'll win, but I don't think they'll lose. I don't know what they're going to do. Because they have shown us, either in entire games or in short periods, some of the most abysmal basketball you could ever want to see. And at times, some pretty good basketball. I can't sit here and say that DeMar DeRozan has to score 35 points in order for the Raptors to win. I don't know. That Lowry has to find his shot. I don't know. That guys have to come off the bench and contribute. I mean, all these things are, you know, yeah, but who do you play at center? I don't know. I got no clue. And my guess is that Dwayne Casey feels the exact same way. Has no idea what to expect from this bunch. But here's the one thing I can tell you for sure. That you can't figure out what to expect isn't good. Good teams expect to be good. Their coaches expect them to play well. Fans expect them to play well. Do what you do. Be consistent with what you have learned how to do. This is a 55-win team. Should have played much, much better than they have. That much I think we can all agree on. And if you think there's some light going to come on, boy, I don't know. Honestly, I don't know if they win tonight. I don't know if they win this series. I don't know if they have a better chance against Miami or Charlotte. I don't know if they can win round two. I got no idea. Alex, North York. Hello.
Inconsistent, Bob. I know exactly what you're saying, and it sounds like Casey's thinking the same way. A quick to all us Greeks and your wife, who's if she's celebrating Easter this weekend, Kalopaska to all of us out there. I'm really confused as to what's going on, and I'm hoping to hell that once again the coach for Indiana rests their two main guys for the beginning, the first 10 minutes my English is challenged today. Anyway, let's hope that they rest them for lots of the game so we'll have a chance to win, because these guys, I'm pretty disappointed, and I would have expected better, and it's just been a letdown. Regarding the hockey thing tomorrow, Crosby and Ovechkin out of 10, a 10 out of 10, putting them 10 out of 10, this Austin guy, whatever the case may be, the first five guys that are available tomorrow, what would you put them up against them to be? 5, 6 out of 10?
What available tomorrow?
The guys who are the first five guys that are they're projecting that are going to be picked tomorrow in the draft, tomorrow night in the NHL draft.
Well, it's not a draft. It's just a draft lottery tomorrow night. So all we're going to find out is the order.
Who do you think?
Oh, you got me. I don't follow junior hockey as well as I should.
It just seems like it's getting watered down every year. Yeah, you know what? These guys are supposed to be superstars, but I think the day of the superstar is long gone. All the best to you, my friend.
Thanks. Well, I don't think the day of the superstar is gone, but I don't think there's a superstar in this draft. I don't think there's an absolute game changer in this draft. Now, the kid who's playing in Europe, I mean, may be good enough. But I need eyeballs on a guy against valid, recognized competition in an environment that duplicates North America, which is to say the CHL. It is not to say that hockey players in Europe are inferior. It is not to say that players coming out of the NCAA are inferior. Not at all. But in order to make an apples-to-apples comparative and to attempt to project what a 17-year-old is going to be like when he's 23 years old, I got to see him against the kind of the best competition in the environment that most closely duplicates what he is about to experience. Austin Matthews may be a great hockey player. Probably is. And he is certainly entitled to play anywhere he wants to. But I can't speak to the level of competition. I can't speak to the assets that he has playing on a bigger ice surface. Number of games. Travel situation. How do I accurately assess him without an apples-to-apples comparison? It's a hard enough process under any circumstance. I don't doubt, understand, I'm not knocking Austin Matthews. I don't doubt he's the best player out there, but I don't know. If the kid had played in Sault Ste. Marie and scored 60 goals and had 120 points, that's easy, right? It's easy to figure out he's good enough. You then have the ability to go to coaches and talk about, well, what's he like in a practice situation? What's he like in a traveled situation? How does he play back-to-back games on back-to-back nights? I mean, occasionally I think they will play three games in consecutive nights. Not very often, but and maybe they don't even. 3 and 4. It's principally a weekend league. Lots of questions. I suspect he'll be the number one draft choice. I wouldn't argue. But do I know? Am I comfortable? No. But to your point, we don't know if he's a great player. The hockey people tell us he's the best available. I don't doubt that. But it doesn't mean great players can't materialize. I mean, we had a great player come through the draft just 1 year ago. So I sort of, unfortunately, Alex, dispute your claim. Andrew, Toronto, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
Yeah.
I'm one of the many Raptors fans who think that obviously they need to get out of the first round this year. But I'm wondering, they make it to the second round. Does how they perform in the second round have any large bearing on the direction the team takes next year?
That's a really good question. I mean, I think it depends. Look, the direction you're referring to be specific at this point would be how many of these guys do you keep? Or do you, in a one stroke, in a couple of short strokes, or over a period of time, evolve into a different team. The one decision they're going to have to make is DeMar DeRozan. Now, I have said repeatedly, I do not believe in be a max dollar guy. At least worth a max dollar contract. I would say to you that regardless of how the team itself performs in the number of games they have, whether it's two or, you know, 15 more games, how DeMar DeRozan performs will determine whether the Raptors offer him a contract that he wants to take. So there's a lot at stake for DeMar DeRozan. As for the whole team, the bare minimum was around one win, in my opinion. That's the bare minimum. I think you can make the argument that they will have achieved a level of success if they get to the conference final, presumably against Cleveland, but although you never know. It's the in-between. In other words, losing round two. That's the one that's hard to figure out. Well, you did better, but you won round one, but you didn't get any further than that. And how much better is this team going to be as currently constructed? Biombo's a free agent. You know, he's shown some signs. Don't you want to keep him around? I think you do, but you know, there's some guys on this team that you want to see play more minutes. But if you keep the nucleus together, like Powell's a guy I think everybody wants to see progress. Let's see him play more minutes. Well, where's he going to play? Who are you going to sit? These are all difficult questions. And really what it comes down to for Masai is this team, did they show me enough for me to be confident in going ahead with this nucleus? I know there's going to be tweaks every year. Even great teams tweak their roster by two or three players. Raptors may tweak it by more than two or three players. But who are those seven or eight guys? Caboclo doesn't look like he's a guy who's going to get into that group, at least not next year. Powell's a guy who's fought his way there and almost assuredly is deserving a lot more minutes. But where are you going to get him? At whose cost? At whose expense? Do you have a four that you are comfortable with? Who's available in free agency? How does that change your perspective? We'll get into more discussion about this after the season is over and before the postseason, and then we'll be able to more accurately assess the Raptors situation, or at least hypothesize what Masai Ujiri might be thinking. One more before the break. Jeff in Mississauga, hello.
Hi, Bob. I have been around elite and Olympic sport my whole life, and I'd like you to solve this puzzle for me.
Oh, God.
How can a player like Scola be good enough to start one game and not even be good enough to come off the bench the next?
Now, that is a function of when you're hot, and when you're cold, you are really cold. And he missed four open threes and got a seat on the bench as a result. And other guys came on and performed well enough to keep him on the bench. I think, you know, most coaches, especially coaches with an unstable lineup, and the Raptors lineup is unstable. Let's be certain of that. This coach does not have five guys he's going to throw out there every bleeping night. These are my five. These guys are going to start. That's always subject for question. Valanciunas is going to start almost every night if he's healthy. Well, he's going to start every night if he's healthy. Lowry and DeRozan going to start every night if they're healthy. Carroll, you presume, going to start every night if he's healthy. No. The other guy? I don't know. Who's hot? Scola was that guy. He was the guy that was given that mantle. He hasn't had it all year. Other guys have played. The Carroll injury caused variances over the course of the season that you make it difficult, more difficult to assess who the five are. But there are no obvious five even tonight. I have not seen the starting lineup. I'm guessing Patterson's in there. But that's only based on the fact that he started in game, what the hell was the last game? Five. It's a guess. Could he go another direction? Unlikely, but he could. Because he doesn't have five guys. That's part of the problem. It's not a finished product. Whether you keep DeRozan, whether you keep Biombo or not, it's not a finished product. He's not done. He needs more pieces. Either that, or he's got to look at a guy like Powell and say, this kid can be good, maybe even great. I got to find him playing time. And that's going to come at a cost to somebody else. And what is my roster going to look like? I don't want to be too small. I got to have somebody else out there to bang on the boards. I got to be able to find somebody else who can finish in the paint. A lot of these decisions have not been made yet. It will be the performance of individuals on this team, not the team itself as much as individuals on this team, their performance over however many games are left in this, that will decide for Masai Ujiri what direction he goes. Now, team success follows individual success, so you can't eliminate that entirely. But this is, to reiterate, it's not a finished product. Whatever success they may have. 29 before the hour of the break, and then more of your phone calls. This is Prime Time.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Minutes before the hour, roundtable has John Shannon, Gordon Kirk, and Brad Fay on it. And me, if I stick around. Where'd you come up with that? That's you too. See, really? It's not one of their more popular songs, though, is it? No. Well, I don't remember you ever playing it, but I like it. It's okay. Brad is in Fort McMurray. Hello.
How you doing, Bob?
Hi, I'm okay.
I'm just calling. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Just calling in regards to all the people calling in about the Raptors, and it just seems repetitive. I'll clear up something here. It's more of a statement. The Raptors had 82 games to assess their team and figure out who are the best players in the best situation. Sometimes it doesn't work out through injuries. As of right now, before the playoffs, when people were jockeying for position, you had Detroit and Indiana. When I seen those two teams at the bottom that could face the Raptors, I was like, oh no, that's not good. Bad matchups through the power forward and the center for Detroit. And then you look at Indiana, the true basketball fans know C.J. Miles is deadly from three, and had really good years in the NBA. Then you have Monte Ellis, who was an all-star, who almost averaged 26 points a game for Dallas.
Seen better days, perhaps. I get it, but
and
okay.
And then, you know, you look at matchups. This is what the Raptors have to do. Bismack Biyombo, a power forward. Jonas Valanciunas at center. Your choice between Powell to start, Damari Carroll, DeMar DeRozan, and Kyle Lowry. Biggest point is Bismack Biyombo, because he's on the weak side, he grabs you the loose balls, the 50-50 balls off there, and Indiana can't, they'll have to face him up one-on-one. You double-team Jonas Valanciunas, then it dumps off to Biombo, and then they can work.
Well, you see, you put the two big men on the court at the same time.
Well, they have a couple, right? And the way that you look at it is the boards. Bismack Biombo dominated them and broke his career record for rebounds. And you got to look at the offside. The thing that
here's the problem. Let me give you the problem with that assessment. I thank you for the call. I appreciate it. It's an interesting idea. Here's what I see as problematic of that, and I'll be interested to see what anybody else thinks. The Raptors have been pathetic from the outside, shooting from the outside. Their threes aren't falling. You clog up the middle with 2 7-footers. You have to hit the outside jump shot. Most of those in today's NBA will be threes. Guys don't want to take an 18-footer. 15, that's different. They don't want to take an 18 to 23-footer. They'd rather step back behind the line. We've seen it night after night after night. You'll see it 10, 15, 20 times in a game. Guys get in position behind the line. It's understandable. It's an extra point. But the Raptors shooting from there has been awful. That's the scary part of that philosophy. Other than that, and again, you know, twin doubles, does it work when you don't have guys who are real good offensive players? Biombo is fine offensively when he's open. If he's guarded, he hasn't got a whole lot of moves. Valanciunas is a little more, has greater ability offensively, but he's not a real offensive stud. He's not a guy that can throw up 30 points on a good night. I just think there's a lot of risk in that. It's interesting. I just think there's a lot of risk in it. Craig in Newmarket, hello.
Hi, Bob. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you.
Thank you for taking the call.
You bet.
I had a question regarding the NFL draft. I'm a long-time Dolphins fan. I think they absolutely got a steal with Tunsil at number 13. That being aside, I just wanted to get your views on the guy the Broncos drafted, Paxton Lynch, at 26, if you thought it was a good move. And maybe if you could shed some views on how you thought or how you think maybe he's going to fit into the system and stack up against Goff and Wentz, who are scheduled to step right in and start right away. Do you think this guy is going to be a starter right away?
No. Well, Paxton Lynch, I don't think there's a chance in hell he's a starter right away. He's a longer-term project. He's tall. He's gangly. He's got a decent arm. That's more or less you're watching. If you're watching on television right now, you're seeing highlights of him. And that's most of what I've seen. I mean, how many guys watched, you know, Memphis this year?
Yeah.
He can run a bit, but running in college and running in the pros are two entirely different things. He's got to work on his body, especially his upper body. He's just a little too skinny for me. He's just not going to be durable if he gets banged around, and he will get banged around. And he'll get banged around by guys that are bigger and stronger than guys he met on a regular basis. So I don't think it's a bad pick. I think Denver manipulated their way into what they needed, which was a quarterback to develop, but that's what he is. I would think if I was coaching in Denver, he would not get the clipboard out of his hand. He would not play a down this year. He would watch and learn and build his body up. And then next year or the year after, you see. But I think he's a 2 to 3 year project. And beyond that, you never know. You really can't tell. I thank you for the call, though. I think he was taken about, look, Lee Steinberg's a pal of mine, and he represents Lynch. And he was hopeful that he might go in the top 10. I saw a projection that the Cleveland Browns would take him at number 8. Like, and yeah, I know, Browns fans, you know, we look at what the Browns are projected to take. Well, I wouldn't have taken him there. And Cleveland wasn't going to take him there. He's got talent, but he's an if. I think you got to take, unless you are desperate for a particular position, You got to take a sure thing. I think you got to be sure. I mean, you know, your second round draft choice can bomb. Well, it only hurts a little bit. Third round, less. Fourth round, who cares? After that, doesn't matter. Some make it, some don't. You're in high-risk territory by the time you get to the fourth round under any circumstance. You're 120 picks into the draft. First round, you better get a player. If you don't, you fall behind everybody else in a race that's pretty short. It's like stumbling at the start of the 100-meter race. It's almost impossible to win if you stumble. And that, in my opinion, is what a first-round draft choice means. That's the getting-out-of-the-gate-quick philosophy. David, North York, hi.
Hi, Bob. How you doing, man?
Okay, pal.
Good. Two things. The first thing is, after the lottery tomorrow and before the draft, I can't remember this. I'm having a senior moment.
All right, me too.
when you get to our age, right?
Yeah, no kidding.
Do they have? Can they have the players come and not try out, but be assessed?
No.
See if they don't. Not like basketball, eh?
Well, not on an individual. There's a combine, but there's not an individual team thing.
Oh, okay. And the second thing is Norman Powell, they got to keep him because ever since Charles Oakley left the Raptors, they've never found another banger like him. And I think this guy can turn into like a Charles Oakley.
Well, he's not a Charles Oakley. He's more of a DeMar DeRozan, to be very honest with you.
He looks pretty big.
No, he's not that big. He's more of a skill set player than a banger. But yeah, and they've got him for the next 2 years, guaranteed. Maybe three. I always forget. It's 3 years they're guaranteed with an organization, right? Or is there a fourth-year option? I can never really get that one straight. But yeah, he's around for the next couple of years, and he's shown enough. Look, I don't know what kind of player he can be. 4 years? There you go. So I was sort of right. You don't know. But he looks like he could evolve into something really good. And I think you got to give him a chance. You got to take a look. He was bounced back and forth, played in the D League, came back up, sat on the bench a lot. I never heard about him complaining. I think he did everything he was supposed to do, finally got a chance, showed some stuff, in, out, and now really kind of has jumped up in these playoffs. It's that four-year college thing. I talk about it all the time. I know there's the odd guy. 18-year-old, 19-year-old can jump into a league like the NBA. There's the odd NHL player can jump out of junior at age 18 and be competitive in the NHL. There's the odd one. But there's way too many that think they can that can't. Give me a four-year guy. I mean, I just think it's a brilliant pick. 4 years in Southern California playing basketball. Older. Wiser, more mature, more experienced, quicker to develop. Wouldn't even be remotely surprised if by sometime next year he's a starter. Not even a little surprised. But you're not going to get that with an 18 or 19-year-old. That almost never happens. There are flaws to his game without a doubt. That is why, I mean, the coaching staff has looked at him for months. There are things that expose him that we haven't seen yet because we haven't seen enough of him. But they've seen enough of him. If he was as good as he has looked intermittently during these playoffs and late in the season, he'd have been playing. Believe me, if he looked half that good all the time, he'd have been playing. So there are things about his game that still need to develop. And I don't know what they are, and I don't know whether he can do it. But right now, I'll be really surprised if he doesn't get a shot to play a lot of minutes next year. Shannon, Kirk, Brad Fay, Roundtable coming up next on Primetime.